U.S. Congressman Tim Walz is currently serving his sixth term representing Minnesota's first congressional district. He lives in Mankato, and as a veteran himself, he's the ranking member of the Veterans Affairs Committee, serves on the Agriculture Committee as well, and he joins us today on Making Sausage for our governor candidate conversations. Thank you for being in our studios with us.
Thank you for having me. It is certainly beautiful here.
And DFL commentator Colleen Nardone also joining us in the studio. Thanks for being here, Colleen.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, you can start us off, I think.
Okay, the first thing we want to do is help our listeners get to know you better. Some things about your background and how you've come to this decision that this is the right time and the right office for you to run for.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, I'm a school teacher from Mankato, geography teacher and football coach and basketball coach, and help build the prom and sets for the plays and all of the things that teachers do. I spent 24 years in the Army and the Army National Guard. My wife's also a teacher. We've got two small children. Hope is, well, 16 driving now, so I'm knocking on wood. And my son, Gus, is 10. He goes to Roosevelt Elementary in Mankato. And I've had the privilege of representing Southern Minnesota in Congress. And I think I've done it in a manner that reflects on those Minnesota values, bringing people together to solve problems, focusing on those issues like farm bills, focusing on the issues of our veterans and care for them. And I think this polarization we've seen both federally and here at the state level, it has to end. It is making it difficult to govern. It is splitting communities. And quite honestly, it's holding us back from our potential. And I think now is the time to have someone who understands the process, someone who has navigated in a very polarized D.C., and been recognized for being bipartisan. And so I want to come back to Minnesota. I want to make sure that it's one Minnesota. And this idea of greater Minnesota versus the Twin Cities must end, because it's holding us back. And so I think now is the right time for that. I think it's a leadership that Minnesota is craving, of pulling people together to solve problems. And I'm going to try and make that case.
So what do you think that your signature issue, kind of like Governor Dayton's, has been education, among other things, but what would be your issue that you would really want to focus on as Minnesota's governor?
Yeah, and as a teacher, I certainly applaud that. I think you're never going to stray far from education. It is the foundational principle for people to achieve individually. It's also what builds our strong communities. I think the issues of healthcare and healthcare delivery is going to come back to the states. I'm certainly proud that I supported the ACA and moved it, but there's things that need to be fixed. But I would say that the issue that again is a governor's not going to come to you with a 10-point plan to solve all these things. I think the thing that I've been able to do in Congress and I can do here is pulling people together to get beyond this polarization. Let's have the discussion on the more difficult issues. Let's talk about water quality and how we continue to be an agricultural leader. I'm proud that in Southern Minnesota I can get the corn growers on board with me and the Sierra Club. Up here it's mining and resources, as well as being able to make sure we protect those fragile environments. So I think as far as the issues that we can tackle, making sure the state's growth, setting a vision for the next 100 years in Minnesota, those things are prepared to happen if we can have our politics quit holding us back. So I would say that there's going to be education we'll focus on, we'll continue to care for our veterans, but it's more about the process of how we get it done. And I think proving, in a difficult environment of bringing people together to create coalitions to solve problems, I think that's the thing that we need to do. And I'm very hopeful that it can happen.
The next item we had on our agenda was to ask you what challenges you see Minnesota facing as you would come up on the next 4 years. You've kind of answered some of that already. Is there any more you'd like to say to elaborate on it?
Yeah. This is a state that stands out. When my wife and I were young teachers, I started my teaching career on the reservation, Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and then I had the opportunity to be the first group of American high school teachers to teach in China. I taught American history in China to Chinese students back in the 80s. Met my wife, who is a Gustavus Adolphus graduate, and she had this exotic Minnesota accent, and we came from Nebraska. And we looked at a shining example of a state that invested in education, that valued economic opportunities, that valued the environment. And I think as I look forward to this, that the challenges we face in Minnesota is we need to continue to grow our workforce. It's a real problem both here and in Southern Minnesota, and affordable housing for those workers. They say that they don't come to Minnesota for our values, but they stay. We need to continue to be a national leader to innovate. We need to make sure, just like with the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota, we make that triangle, the bio research, healthcare, true health care, not insurance reform, health care reform capital of the world. And up here with our mineral resources, both forest products and minerals, we have the opportunity to have the value added. So I think the challenge for us is to continue to be on the front end of innovation, but making sure that that workforce, workforce housing, solid public schools, solid infrastructure are all there. And as I said again, the communities are doing this. The thing that's holding us back is the lack of political will to move forward. And I think Governor Dayton has moved us on many things. He's made many attempts. I think now it's time to take it to that next level, that the public and the public will to get things done will allow us to do that. But those are going to be real challenges. We're going to have a workforce shortage. We're going to have workforce housing shortage. We're going to be competing globally. Like we always said, it's not a cliche. We're well prepared to do that. But having legislative sessions end in shutdowns, having legislative sessions end in lawsuits, having deadlock on the simplest things of moving forward, it is simply got to stop. We've got to find the way to that common ground with a common vision.
You mentioned health care, and you mentioned not in insurance, but genuine health care, and health care is a very dear issue to me. So I would like to know, if the federal government fails to deliver anything on constructive, what would you suggest for Minnesota to do for our citizens?
Well, first thing, I think I would hope you'd get agreement amongst all of the candidates who come here and talk to you that we need to make sure that healthcare is a basic human right, that all Minnesota citizens have access to it and affordability. That includes making sure there's providers in rural areas. I think Minnesota is well positioned in that regard, although some of the rural critical access hospitals, it's harder to get physicians, harder to get general practitioners. But I think Minnesota, of course, led the nation. We certainly, and again, as I said, the ACA made sure millions of people were on health care, did not go bankrupt because of it, but there's fixes that need to be made. I think some of the suggestions about expanding Minnesota care to more people, making sure we get those folks on, making sure MSHA, that high risk pool, is put in place. And then I think, again, we're doing this. We're doing it, something called the Heart of New Ulm. We've reduced heart disease almost 17%, I believe, in New Ulm by a community-wide effort that coordinated what we sell at the New Ulm, German New Ulm, sausages, beer, but with the idea that we had very high heart disease because we spend most of our money on diabetes and heart disease, and we can talk all we want about insurance, but the real kick is prevention. So we have the Blue Zones areas down in Albert Lea where we're getting communities to think long-term, from diet to exercise to walkable communities. Minnesota can lead on that. When you see communities like Mankato that are incredibly bike-friendly, up here you see the trails getting people out. We need to start talking and incentivizing the front end of that, and we've always led. Minnesota, or Minneapolis, was just ranked the healthiest, most active city in America. And that's something that means less people getting sick, less healthcare costs, and we can focus then at places like the university and Mayo on treatment, making sure that if there is cancers, we get people early, we get them on. Those are the ways because again, the whole role of healthcare is to keep people healthy so they can go about their lives and spend time with their grandkids, go fishing, work their jobs so they're not missing time. So I think there's an agreement there, but in DC in the last 7 years have really focused on insurance and insurance reform, and that's not the fix. Minnesota is positioned both through research and through culture to focus on the healthy side of things, and that's what I would like to promote. And I say this, that my mantra was, and I got it in today, I run 7 miles before 7 a.m. and I am not your Norse god Greek athlete or something. I said I'm a person who knows that I'll try and do my best, or if people are out walking or they're out gardening, incentivizing that.
You did, and you did it in the rain today.
I did it at the Anytime Fitness.
Okay, all
yes,
right.
It was a treadmill.
That's all right. That's U.S. Congressman Tim Walz. We're continuing our governor candidate conversations. He is running for Minnesota governor in 2018. Now, you mentioned the word process earlier, and you work for Minnesota on a federal level. At the end of each legislative session lately, things have been very confusing. What do you think your role as governor would be in terms of the Minnesota legislature and the process there?
Yeah, and I saw that way as a as a member of Congress and do now. My job is to represent all the people, not just those that voted for me. And I do not see compromise as a vice. I see it as a virtue. I think I'm proud of the progressive positions I've taken, but I also recognize there are good ideas coming from both sides. I think the idea of the governor is to accept the responsibility to try and figure out how do you get to a reasonable place with an understanding. I'm not going to get 100% of what I want, but if I'm laying out a vision that the people of Minnesota and those people, those visionaries in these communities are bringing to us and asking me to talk about, there's going to be widespread public acceptance, if you will, the social permit to get these things done. It becomes harder then for legislators not to compromise. It becomes harder to say, I'm rigidly in my camp and I can't get that done. And so I see my role as I saw it as a coach, as a sergeant major in the Army, or as a member of Congress who consistently gets rated near the top on bipartisanship and effectiveness, is to bring those people together and, to be honest, to take some of the slings and arrows for the legislators to be able to get, so they get some space to get some things done. So I would consider it heavily on the shoulders of me to make sure that we get those sessions done in a way that, as we say, I mean, in D.C., if everybody leaves relatively unhappy or just minorly happy, you've probably reached a pretty good consensus that I, someone once told me we had a bill and we were just finishing it and they said, well, this bill's not perfect. Well, one of my colleagues stood up and said, of course it's not perfect. If you want perfect, you will get that in heaven. And this place is closer to hell, so this is not too bad. And his point was being that we're ascribing to the perfect that is getting in the way of the good or the adequate on some of this to get it. And the public will then take it and run. So that's where I see my role.
Yeah, some of the areas in the process that we've been asking about were transparency.
Yes.
And also the constitutionality of lumping everything into one big bill, even when it doesn't fit constitutional standards.
Yeah, this is a tough one. The transparency piece is easy, and I am, again, as a Minnesota Lutheran, if you do something good and talk about it, it doesn't count. But I'm running and people don't know me yet. It was my bill that was the Office of Congressional Ethics and the Stock Act, that how Congress does business. It you would think it would already have been a law that members of Congress couldn't make money off the knowledge they got of Congress of trading stocks. That was not the case till I had a bill. I had three co-sponsors to that until 60 Minutes ran an article on it. The next Monday, I had 300. President talked about it in the State of the Union, signed into law. So transparency is absolutely key. Are there times when legislators need to talk offline a little bit? Yes, it's about establishing trust. But I think to err on the side of sunlight is the best disinfectant, it should be there. The idea of putting everything together, this is tricky, certainly on the constitutionality side of it. But one of the things with compromise is, and I know people are a little bit disdainful that, well, why did you have to put that in to get things done? It's just like the Farm Bill. We must have the nutrition title, the eating of the food piece in the Farm Bill, because there's only 35 congressional districts that produce 80% of the food. So if I try and get a Farm Bill done and talk about things that need to be in the Farm Bill of conservation programs or crop insurance, 400 members of Congress have almost limited or any interest in that part of it. And I say their interest is everybody eats. So we do lump a bunch of things together in that, because it makes sense to put conservation in so that if you're going to say, we're going to pay a farmer some crop insurance subsidies, but before we give you that money, you need to make sure that you're doing everything to make sure you protect the waterways. And then we're going to say, if we're going to get the rural or the urban legislators in, we're going to give you something in there for that. So I understand the point on this. I think before I went to Congress, I said, why don't you just have one subject each time? It becomes very difficult in a country this big with so many interests to build that consensus. And I know people say, you know, well, that's that backroom dealing. It's the putting things on. It's actually kind of compromise, and it's kind of the grease that gets things done, as long as it goes with the first piece you said, if you write those bills in a transparent manner. Bringing them to the floor with no hearings and never being printed out, that is absolutely, if it's not unconstitutional, it's immoral in my case, because you're not even letting someone look at it before it goes. But if there's public hearings, you aired it, you had public comment periods, you debated them, it came to the floor, you voted, and it goes through something called regular order. Regular order means a bill. You remember when we were little, that little I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill thing? That's actually the way it's supposed to go. Unfortunately, that's a rarity. for things to go. So I think the two go hand in hand. I think your listeners and as citizens are right to demand that there's not backroom deals with all this crazy stuff put together or might be unconstitutional. But I don't think you should think we shouldn't try and make things so that we as a large nation, if I'm getting something that helps northern Minnesota and there's a piece in there that also helps Minneapolis, then we start to heal that divide. It is ludicrous that people make the assumption that if we build a transit project in Minneapolis, that's why we're not building highways and bridges in greater Minnesota. That is a political construct to drive us apart. It is absolutely in our best interest to make sure the infrastructure of Minneapolis is good, and it's absolutely important to make sure that the highways to our rural communities are good, because that's where our food comes from.
Well, that was kind of our last question, so maybe you want to elaborate on that a little bit more. What do you think are some of the issues that are of most concern to rural residents? And I guess maybe northern Minnesota.
Yeah, well, I think the issue is always of economic growth, a workforce. I think the candidates who come up here and talk to you should not shy away from trying to find solutions between mineral extraction and jobs that matter up here, or forest products in how we manage our national forests or our state lands, and trying to balance that in a way that protects the environment, because not only is it the right thing to do, it's economically the right thing to do to protect the environment. And so I think those challenges that are real, these can be difficult. They need to be driven by science and the process. But it's also more cultural now that I do think, and I feel this in Mankato with my neighbors, that sometimes there's a little that people forget how we live, and we are a little different, and our challenges are different. And those issues become exacerbated by politicians who want to put the other guy in the black hat and themselves in the white hat. That's not where most of us live. And I think then if it comes issues, we have to get robust transportation bill. We should be getting that at the federal level, but we saw what happened. Saturday was supposed to be an announcement on transportation. It turned out to not be an announcement on transportation. We as Minnesotans need to get beyond that and figure that piece out, because it's not ideological to have good roads. It's not ideological to have good schools. It's not ideological to figure out how do we attract workers here. And I don't think it's ideological to say we need to use our resources that we've been blessed with in this state in a responsible manner to create better lives for our citizens while protecting that heritage is paddling on those waters, hunting, fishing, mountain biking. And I think, again, I come back to this, these problems can all be solved if we choose to decide to see the political process as a vehicle to unite communities, find good ideas, and not as a place to be a soapbox for your own personal ideology. If your ideas are good enough and you're articulating enough, people will come to you whether they have one letter behind their name or not. I really do believe that, and I think there's a hunger for that right now. And once we do that, I have great faith in this, as we've always done it. Minnesotans are hardy, they innovate, they're community oriented, and it's been proven we succeed in many areas. So challenges have always been seen as opportunities.
Well, now, you've heard Heidi's and my questions, but we might have left out a question that you'd really like to answer that you've been waiting for. This is your chance to say, this is what the question would have been, and here's the answer.
Yeah. If I could ask the question, I'd say, what reason as citizens do we have to be hopeful that anything in government's going to work? And I would say there's an area, and in fact, it's the law of the land this morning as we woke up. We have a new GI Bill that was a generational piece. It's the fourth iteration of one of the most successful programs we've ever done for our veterans. Yesterday, in the midst of all the chaos that's going on, the president did sign the new GI Bill. That bill was crafted in a bipartisan manner with my chairman, Republican Phil Rowe from Tennessee, and myself as the two people on that. We were able to build a coalition of the veteran service organizations. We were able to pay for it with existing revenue that was out there. It was celebrated as the biggest improvement in decades to the GI Bill, and it passed the House of Representatives unanimously. It passed the Senate unanimously, and the New York Times a few weeks ago said, if you're looking for a ray of hope, it's in the Veterans Affairs Committee. And I can tell you, because the secret is this, it's about disagreeing, certainly on maybe some of the ways to get there, but absolute agreement on it. We want to deliver the best quality care and the best services to our veterans. We must do that in a bipartisan manner. We must compromise, and we must bring in those stakeholders, the American Legion, the VFW, the Disabled American Veterans, the Vietnam Veterans, and it passed. So I would answer the question, if you asked me, are there reasons to be hopeful? Yes, and it is all dependent on the attitude of the people that we send and how we talk about this, with a respect that disagreeing politically does not mean someone hates this country. We should not be in a position where none of us can even go to Thanksgiving dinner anymore with Cousin Ed because it becomes too difficult. Those things are healthy if they're done right. And I think the governor of Minnesota can set that tone. I believe you can make a difference. And I believe there has to be a humility to say, you know what? I don't have all the answers, but there's enough good Minnesotans that can come up with it, and they don't necessarily have to be on one side of the aisle to do it. And then simply get something done. And if it's not perfect, come back and fix it again. Come back and do it again. So,
Congressman Tim Walz, he's running for governor in 2018. Give us your feedback. Email comments at kaxc.org. And catch up on our other governor candidate conversations at kaxc.org. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you both for having me.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again.